Great. So today we're pretty lucky to have Mehrdad Mirbabayi talking to us. Mehrdad is currently a faculty member at ICTT in Trieste, and he's written a number of interesting papers on both the early universe and more formal topics in field theory, and also the late universe with large-scale structure and with various observational implications. But today he's going to talk to us about De Sitter and some new work he's been doing on De Sitter and false vacua. So please, Mehrdad. Also, Mehrdad is going to stick around for a little while after the formal end of the seminar in case anyone wants to stay for a chat. So if you're interested, feel free to do that. But with that, Mehrdad, please take it away.
Okay, thank you, Sima, for the introduction. Yes, so I'm going to talk about this paper called Optoner into De Sitter. And I also mentioned this, this is the first time I'm giving an iPad talk, so I hope it works okay. What is the problem that we want to study here? The problem that we want to study is we want to ask the following question. We want to imagine that we have a landscape or a potential for a scalar field which has a minimum with zero vacuum energy and a minimum with positive vacuum energy. And the question is that if we live in here, in the Minkowski vacuum, whether it is possible to optunnel to the other vacuum and produce a bubble which is big enough to inflate in that other vacuum. Now, why are we asking this, or why am I asking this question? The reason is, depending on who you ask, we have good evidence or we have some hints that we live in lambda-dominated universe now. With a tiny cc. So this is our 10 to the minus 120. So this is the smallness of this number is the famous CC problem. So this is a universe that is going to inflate. It's already inflating. And then we also have very good evidence that we had probably a period of inflation in our past. This point number one and point number two, we had inflation perhaps about 60 folds of inflation in our past. And we want to ask two questions. Two important questions that we can ask. Why is lambda over m Planck to the four so small? And the second question is that what came before, what happened before inflation? And we don't have good answers to either of these questions. There are some, of course, there are a lot of attempts for answering both of these questions, sometimes unrelated, most of the times unrelated, I would say. But I think we don't have any satisfactory answer up to now. And this you can think of it as another attempt, which is the following. We could ask the following question. Could we imagine that there was some super intelligent in civilization who lived in a Minkowski vacuum? And they did some very sophisticated experiment and produced an inflating bubble that led to our universe. And in order to confuse us, they picked a particular vacuum with a very tiny CC just to see whether we are smart enough to figure it out. So basically, that's one way of motivating why we can ask this question. Could we have Minkowski in our past? Of course, if it's gonna be our past, then I should modify a bit this potential. So this potential should perhaps look something like this. There should be a plateau and then goes down to some very tiny CC, but not zero. Okay, so this is perhaps the biggest motivation. Understanding what came before inflation or what can lead to inflationary solutions. Okay, so this was the motivation. If there is a question about this, this you can ask now.
I have a question. So when you say Minkowski, you mean really zero CC, yeah?
Yeah.
And you are thinking about making some process there, yeah? So some excitation, something.
Yes. Because okay. If I'm in exact Minkowski, of course, I won't obtain it. There are theorems about the uniqueness of Minkowski, right? So I'm imagining we have this civilization, it has some big LHC, some called big collider, very sophisticated, and produces this bulb.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So now, of course, the first question to ask is to ask what happens if we just consider QFT without gravity. Then the answer is actually simple. Of course, it is possible. It is possible to obtain. Oh, by the way, I should say here that I'm asking a difficult question, and the only thing that I want to examine is whether it is possible or not. I don't care whether the answer is exotic. It's just a matter of whether it's possible or not. And I want to propose a scenario in which it shows that this is a possibility at the end. So now, why is it even questionable that it is a possibility? First, let us look at QFT. And in QFT, without gravity, it's actually kind of obvious that it is possible. There is no problem. The most trivial thing is that if I have enough energy, I can just kick myself above the barrier to go in the false vacuum. Or if we want to do something, so in QFT, up tunneling is allowed. Either we go above the barrier, or if we want to do something more sophisticated, we can consider the following experiment. Let's consider some initial wave function, which has some big region in the false vacuum. So here I am in the false vacuum. We can think of it as the profile of the phi field. And so this is, say, let's call it phi fp. Here, phi is equal to phi fp. So I have some initial wave function, which is like that. However, if I let this system evolve, eventually everything will decay into asymptotic states of my true vacuum. So this is just the standard results in QFT. The false vacuum in QFT just decays. So eventually, this state under time evolution will go to some excitations in the true vacuum. Now, of course, you can apply time reversal to this process. And start from a scattering state in the true vacuum to get to this big region in the false vacuum. So with enough patience, we can produce big enough regions of the false vacuum. Just choose the right ingoing state.
So you don't care that it will be exponentially suppressed. the subtunneling in that case. Yeah, because I mean, in your picture that you suggest, I mean, the decay of the false vacuum will be exponentially suppressed, right? So, which means that if we reverse it, going there will be some probability of going into false vacuum, but it will be exponentially small. Is it
fine? I guess I'm not sure. Let's say at initial time, this is my state. Then imagine I wait long enough and collect the full outgoing wave function.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would say if I time reverse that whole thing, which is some complicated outgoing wave function, they constructively interfere, so that at t equal to zero, I will end up with this configuration. And then it is
so in a kind of, I mean, you want to be exactly at that resonance, kind of, to get. Yeah, but that will be okay. So you allow this strong fine tuning.
This fine tuning, you said?
Yeah, I think, well,
yeah,
to get exactly into the state that you want. I mean, you need to fine tune a lot of things.
How hard it is. I'm just asking whether it is possible. And here the answer is yes.
Yeah, no, with that I agree, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And what happened? So one thing that we saw here is that in Minkowski, I mentioned, maybe we didn't really see, Minkowski, so this is the Penrose diagram in Minkowski, and what we really do is that we are doing a scattering experiment. So we are sending in some initial states, and eventually whatever happens, we will get, again, Minkowski asymptotic. So we go from a scry minus to a scry plus. The asymptotic structure of the spacetime will not change in quantum field theory. That is perhaps one way of thinking about why in QFD is not such a big deal to consider this false vacuum. Eventually it decays to Minkowski. If we go to gravity, the situation becomes very different, because in the future, we want to have a bubble, inflating bubble in the false vacuum. This will, unlike in QFD, in gravity, if I have this bubble of false vacuum which inflates, it will change the asymptotic structure of the spacetime. So if you remember the Penrose diagram for the sitter, it looks like a square. And the statement that the future of the process will contain a piece of this, a piece of the future of the sitter. So scry plus of the sitter. On the other hand, we want the past to be Minkowski. So the past is Minkowski, perhaps with some initial ingoing states. However, this of course, in the future, we could also have asymptotic Minkowski, other stuff. But the point is that there will be a region which is inflating. And
Could I pause for a second and ask something about the previous slide?
Sure.
So just to ask a little bit more about what Sergey was asking. Instead of calling it fine-tuned, the worry that you might have is that to make the wave function exactly, you know, so that just its time reverse is automatically the up-tunneled state. It's like an extreme Schrodinger cat state. I mean, it's a superposition of different universes, one where the universe decayed today and another one where it decayed a billion years ago. And I guess that in principle that is allowed by quantum mechanics to create such a state. But so that's what, just to be clear, that's what one is imagining. Do you agree?
Yes, so here I came up with this very, as you say, fine-tuned example, just because it's extremely simple show that it's a logical possibility.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
In practice, if you wanted to do it, you would never do it this way. Just if you just go to the collider and do some energetic enough experiment here, it will kick some piece of the space-time in the false light.
Okay.
This is not the most practical way of seeing it. It's just the one which you can convince yourself
it's logically possible.
Yes.
Okay,
but now in gravity, this
sorry,
is not...
I have one more question about that problem. So to consider the inverse process, do we need to break the second law of thermodynamics?
Oh, don't ask me thermodynamics questions. I don't know.
But it sounds like the ground force vacuum to the dissipated situation. Maybe the entropy should grow, right?
No, I'm talking about the deterministic process. I'm not averaging over anything, it's not the coarse grain.
But the force vacuum bubble is a very coherent state compared to the dissipated situation. So the force vacuum bubble has a lower entropy, I think.
I don't understand that. I'm talking about the purest state.
Okay, so now you consider unitary evolution then in that sense. Okay, I see. Okay, so anyway, yeah, please go ahead.
So yes, so now in classical gravity, the statement is that this is not a law by Penrose singularity theorem. So Penrose forbids this scenario if we assume that the null energy condition is satisfied, which I'm going to assume. Why? Because if I have this region of future, asymptotic future of the sitter, then I can construct something that is called an anti-trapped surface. It's a surface in which the light cone, the both ingoing and outgoing light cone of this surface are expanding. And then one can show that if null energy condition is satisfied, then whenever I find an anti-trapped surface, there has to be a singularity. There has to be a singularity in the past. So anti-trapped surface plus null energy condition leads to existence of a singularity in the past.
Sorry,
I just assume that there is no singularity in the past. So this is forbidden in classical GR, yes?
So how do you take these conditions to the sitter part of the situation?
Which condition?
You want to extend the Penrose theorem to the de Sitter as well? I'm a little bit confused. You're saying because, or are you saying because in the past, in the other side, NEC is not violated? And
because in extend it to the de Sitter. Yeah, I am assuming that null energy condition is satisfied always in all part, everywhere in the space time.
But if it's the sitter, it's saturated. It's not.
Yeah, that's good enough.
I thought Penrose theorem doesn't apply to the sitter. That's why I'm confused.
Oh, I think it does apply.
Because we don't have a singularity in the sitter, right?
Well, because it's a closed geometry, so I didn't mention one other condition. of Penrose singularity, which is that the universal cover of the space universal cover of a space-time, the spatial stasis should be non-compact. Now, you could say, okay, therefore we don't care about it, but here it's not, that doesn't apply because we started from the asymptotic Minkowski, so that close, I'm not going to get a closed universe, I'm going to get a piece of Minkowski. So the universal cover, I know that it is, in fact, not the universal cover, the spatial stasis, I know that they are non-compact. So that, and that other condition is not, does not apply here either.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a quick question as well?
Sure.
In this case, do you really need the future asymptotic to be disitter? Imagine that you uptunneled and then you inflated down to a Minkowski vacuum again.
Uh-huh.
And so eventually you have a Minkowski future asymptotic as well, but you probably can still phrase some anti-trap surface argument.
Yes, I don't really need the future asymptotic. It's enough to have the inflating solution.
So is there, yeah, what is that? So what is the condition on the...
You only need to get an anti-trap surface. So if you have inflation, any surface, any... Take a sphere which is bigger than the horizon, that will be an anti-trapped surface. It doesn't have to be infinitely long, this city.
So it's like saying that inflation more than one E-fold is enough to get an anti-trapped surface, something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool, okay.
Yes, so therefore, and this is an old observation by Goose and collaborators, Goose and Fahey. Okay, so in classical gravity, you cannot uptunnel. So you see there is a difference between just the case without gravity and with gravity. There's a qualitative difference. So therefore, we want to ask the question in quantum gravity. And the question is therefore, is it possible to create a universe in the lab via quantum tunneling? And this is the title of the paper by Fahey, Goose, and Guven. About 30 years ago, they asked the exact same question. And around a little bit afterwards, this problem was also studied by Fischler, Morgan, and Polchinski. And so what was the old result? In those papers, they proposed a scenario for this uptunneling. However, that scenario, so that scenario involves, for instance, in the Fahey Guven case, this is involves, of course, we are doing a quantum tunneling, so we are considering some semi-classical calculation using Euclidean gravitational path integrals. Find some instanton that leads to the transition. However, the instanton that they find has some problem, has a singularity. And therefore, the problem, the question remains open, whether it is a possibility or not. So let me just, maybe I just draw some simple Penrose diagram of what they are doing. So they consider a simplified setup, and these simplifications are something that I am also going to do. Again, we can do as many simplifications as we want because we just want to settle the question of principle. So the first assumption is to consider the spherical symmetry. So we are considering configurations which have the spherical symmetry. So in 4D, for instance, we have a factor of S2, which is always symmetric. And in addition to that, we work in the thin wall, or they work in the thin wall approximation. Meaning that by thin wall approximation, I really mean that I'm not going to talk about profiles of the scalar field phi that interpolate between the two vacua. I'm just going to talk about the domain wall and the trajectory of the domain wall that separates the two vacua. And this is a domain wall with some positive tension. The sigma domain wall is larger than zero. And really the question that is being asked is that, can I find any domain wall with positive tension that allows me to glue these solutions together, Minkowski and De Sitter? So let me just draw the Penrose diagrams that they consider. So the idea there is that let us start from a configuration which we think is easy to get. And it is very symmetric. So this is asymptotically Minkowski space, and it's actually asymptotically, it's a Schwarzschild geometry asymptotic in the outside. But then there is a bubble of the small bubble of the Sitter in here. And this one is a configuration which is supposed to be easy. What do I mean by easy? By easy, I mean that the bubble of the Sitter is small enough that it collapses. So the situation is kind of like being QFD. When we are talking about the smallest scales, gravity doesn't matter. If this bubble is not gonna inflate, then it's as if we are in QFD, and there we know that the process is possible. So now this one is an idealized version of forming a bubble in QFD, where this bubble is been, now it is, instead of sending some initial waves, I'm just considering this, or they are considering this geometry, which is very simple and symmetric. But the non-trivial thing is to tunnel to the following configuration. And now the domain wall is somewhere in here. Sorry. In here. So this is the question that is being asked, whether it is possible to have a transition from geometry on the left to a geometry on the left, which now does have this described plus region of the Sitter. And the method that was used is to consider the following. So we consider the time symmetric slice of these two geometries and follow the usual prescriptions of how to do semi-classical approximation for transition amplitudes. Find some Euclidean geometry.
Sorry. So yeah, I'm just getting a bit confused. So why do they consider this, even with this small bubble, why do they consider geometry with a black hole? Because yeah, in your in the experiment we have in mind, we don't have any singularities in the past or in the future. Yeah, so what's the logic to include black hole in this reasoning? From the start,
this small bubble could just decay into some stuff,
right?
Instead of for, but that would be dirty. So it's just to have a clean setup, not having to talk about some other matter physics.
So the bubble decays into a black hole, or no, it's just absorbed by the black hole.
Sorry, let me say it this way. Maybe this is a better answer. If the bubble is symmetric enough, if it is perfectly symmetric, and the life, no, I don't even, yeah, if it is perfectly symmetric and the lifetime is long enough, I think it will collapse into a black hole. Like, it's like having a spherical shell. Right, the domain wise is just a spherical shell that collapses into a black hole.
It pushed towards the. So you mean in the simple approximation, we get a black hole. Because, mm-hmm. Well, in real field theory, if I include resolution of the thin wall, I would expect rather bouncing waves, yeah, like you had in the beginning of your talk. So, yeah, so I'm a bit confused whether we are. Yeah, whether the starting point with the black hole is actually the right one. So it sounds a bit weird to have a black hole. Also in the past, you have it here, right?
Sorry, but I don't understand. Are you saying the moment? Yeah, that sounds confusing. It's not that the moment I give any width to the bubble, it won't collapse into a black hole. That cannot be true.
Well, it can, because the fields will repel before they enter under the horizon, yeah? So when you make simple approximation.
That depends on your field theory and the
it does,
size
yeah.
of the bubble and many things.
I agree with you, but if gravity is weak enough, then your bubble will decay just into waves that we know, even if it's a thin wall bubble.
I agree, but I don't think this configuration is impossible. I agree that it is not generic.
Mm-hmm.
Could I just add, Sergey? I think the intuition about why they have the bubble, Merdad, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's just that if you imagine trying to create this de Sitter by sending in a pulse of some spherical collapsing pulse of waves, some spherically collapsing pulse of scalar field to go over the barrier and in, if you want to make a big enough patch of de Sitter, the threshold for making the interior de Sitter larger than its own horizon volume is the same from the outside observer's perspective as classically creating the threshold for creating a black hole from the pulse. Isn't that right, Merdad?
I think you are trying to compare the Schwarzschild radius of the black hole with the horizon radius of the system. Is this what you are trying to do?
Yes. I think I thought that the condition to make a sufficiently large de Sitter region on the interior was related to the condition that from the exterior observer's perspective that the interior that the collapsing pulse would collapse to a black hole. I mean, I think that's
yeah. I think that's definitely correct. That if I manage to form an inflating bubble, it has to be eventually hidden behind the black hole horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that there is no escape from that.
Right.
Just because I cannot glue the asymptotic future asymptotic of the Sitter to future asymptotic of Minkowski, there should be something between that separation that would be singular black hole singularity. So however, I guess I should say that this. I'm not going to talk about much about this setup. I just wanted to mention that. I wanted to mention that this exists, but there are some issues with it. Let me also show this picture. So if I consider this a special slice, so it is it corresponds to doing a tunneling from a configuration like this. the configuration like that. So what happens is that the bubble, which was, so this point here, this region here is the horizon of the horizon of the black hole. So here I'm going through this bifurcation point. So that is, that corresponds to this point. So this, the idea is that this tunneling wants to produce, make a big region of the sitter, and the big region of the sitter has to be produced behind that bifurcation point. And ultimately, it seems that the problem with this scenario is basically that in order to construct this setup, we need to do that. And if we look at the Euclidean geometries that want to implement that, they are, it's almost at the level of a theorem that you will have to deal with this singularity of Fahey-Gusskuben. There will be that, that basically the horizon of this black hole in Euclidean geometry will be, will have some singularity. Now there are different perspectives on this issue. There has been recent papers, I guess last year, there were two, or 2 years ago, there were two papers by De Alvis, Quevedo and collaborators, and another paper by Marouf and Fu, and they had opposite positions on whether these solutions are acceptable or not. So the, I would say the problem is not 100% settled, but it's not, it seems that it's not good enough for ensuring that up-tunneling is possible, because one has to understand better the, that question about singularity.
Merdad, I'm not sure I understood. So what is the matter of controversy? Well, after all, the solutions either exist or not. And then the picture that you showed, I don't see where the singularity is. I mean, it looks
no,
like
in this picture, actually, you cannot see. Maybe in the next slide you will see. Yeah, let's talk about this and this other question, and then I think I'll be able to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the in this same paper by Marouf and Fu, which was written 2 years ago, they ask a similar question, which is that can we produce an inflating bubble? Can produce an inflating bubble in asymptotically ADS the space time via Euclidean path integral, again under the same assumption, considering just domain was. And here basically the question is, I want to take the ADS geometry or Schwarzschild ADS geometry, which looks like this this picture on the left. The radius of the sphere goes to infinity at the boundary of ADS. So this is the ADS region. And then I want to consider the Euclidean, so ADS Euclidean or EADS. And Euclidean DS, which is just a sphere. And I want to cut some regions of Euclidean DS and Euclidean ADS and glue them together. Under the condition that this equations of motion, basically a junction condition, is satisfied, and the tension of the ball, the domain ball has to be positive. Now, basically, the answer is that this is impossible if we want to do it. It's kind of intuitive why it is impossible. It's basically the fact that if I have a domain ball with the positive tension, then what it implies is that the at least at the points when this domain wall is stationary, doesn't because the domain wall is you can parameterize it by the radius of that sphere that I said is symmetric. And this domain well leads to a jump in the derivative of the normal derivative of the size of the sphere, or a jump in the extrinsic curvature, and it implies that it has to have a behavior which is which has to be concave. So if I have a domain with positive tension and look at the behavior of R as I approach or as I go through, and R is the radius of S2, or the area, how do I measure the area of this S2 factor, which I said is symmetric. So the positive tension of domain one means that I have this this curve for R has to be concave. On the other hand, since as in asymptotic ADS, R goes to infinity in the sitter. On the other hand, the boundary R, the radius. So here, if I want to draw in the sitter, I want to draw how the radius behaves. It does something like this. On the other hand, so in the sitter and in ADS, what it does is that it behaves something like that. And then one can see maybe even from these pictures that if I want to glue this ADS to the sitter part, I will need to have a convex shape rather than a concave. Now, how do Farhi, Guven manage to produce this bubble? Is basically the geometry that they consider is basically has two copies of this Euclidean ADS geometry. So what happens here in this Euclidean ADS is that the radius of S2 shrinks onto the horizon, which is this point. So the radius shrinks onto this point. And then I will get the cigar geometry. So I think the one way to think about how they construct the solution is that they basically have two cigar geometries. And the sitter is glued on the other side. So you basically cut it from here and glue the bubble of the sitter. So here you have asymptotic ADS and here you have the sitter. So now you can satisfy this jump condition. And where do I have the singularity? This is the region when there is a singularity at the tip of these two cones that are attaching. Connecting. I don't know if I answered Sergei.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, now I understand. Yeah, thanks.
Okay. There is this question which is kind of similar when you go into the details of what we are doing. I think you already saw that there is a similarity. Instead of asymptotic Minkowski, here I'm talking about asymptotic ADS. Of course, we think that if I have if I have ADS geometries which are very big, I can reconstruct flat space processes by setting up some boundary conditions in ADS. So if I zoom in ADS, I will get just flat space. So if it is possible in ADS, one would imagine that it should also be possible in Minkowski. And anyway, ADS might even be better for some people. It's not. it's yeah, okay, let me don't say much more, but there is of course there is a way of constructing the scattering states of Minkowski as a limit of taking ADS curvature to infinity. But there is a closer connection between these two setups, and that was actually the important point for my purposes, which is that if I go to the near horizon geometries of some particular solutions in GR that I'm going to mention, then the problem of up-tunneling from Minkowski to the sitter translates into the problem of up-tunneling from ADS to the sitter. How does it work? So here I'm considering this spherically symmetric matrix. And in one of them, in one case, I'm going to consider, so I want to consider two solutions. One is the Schwarzschild, the sitter solution. So of course, this is a solution in the false vacuum. And this is the Penrose diagram for this Schwarzschild, the sitter solution. It has a horizon, the black hole horizon, and cosmological horizon. And it has the topology of an interval or R, the spatial topology of an interval or R times S2. And then the other geometry that I want to consider is a Reisner-Nordstrom solution. It's actually, I want to consider an Rn wormhole. So this is the Penrose diagram again. This solution again has two horizons corresponding to two zeros of this F. These are the asymptotic Minkowski regions. Now the idea is that, imagine I identify these two asymptotic regions of this space time. Then it becomes an Rn wormhole. So now here I'm showing this drawing by Wheeler of a wormhole. So this wormhole, this Rn wormholes have some electric field or magnetic field that that appears here. And now after identification, the spatial geometry, so if I consider the spatial geometry, it will look like this picture that I've drawn here, or Wheeler has drawn. Now, what is the scenario that I'm going to propose, I consider? So this is the alternative scenario that I want to consider. This is, the scenario is the following. We want to consider this solution with some excitation in the wormhole. And the question is that can there be a transition between this geometry to a geometry in which a piece of this Schwarzschild de Sitter spacetime is implanted in here. So now here I will have the sitter or a piece of the sitter or Schwarzschild the sitter. And here it was just ADS, the Reisner-Nordstrom solution, but with an excitation. Now, the nice simplification that happens in this setup is that if I go to the near extremal regime, then the length of this throat becomes very long and the size of this two factor becomes almost constant. So here, the size of this two factor, so here, that's what I mean by the size of this two factor or R squared. What I have is that R squared here, so in some units, set it one, it will be 1 plus phi. This is not the same phi that I used before. There won't be any phi, the scalar field anymore, because we are doing this domain walls and thin wall approximation. And phi is much less than one. So what happens is that there is a throat here whose length is whose size is almost constant, and I can do a dimensional reduction on that row to reduce the geometry to a two-dimensional geometry, on which there will be is the phi field, the small field, which is called dilaton, which is changing in that 2D geometry. And a similar thing happens also in this case. So here as well, I will have R squared. If I go to near extrema regime, then I will have R squared equals one plus some small quantity. And I can dimensionally reduce on that. So this is what I'm gonna discuss here. We do dimensional reduction. And we get the, so in the Rn case, we go in this region in the near so in the Rn region, we go in this near horizon geometry. And there we get a metric, a two-dimensional metric, which is ABS2 and a phi solution, which I write it as A times cosh rho plus minus some constant. I guess this doesn't matter for the purpose of this talk, is a detail. And here I'm just writing the Euclidean geometry. So I'm just going to Euclidean. So this is a 2D space, which is ADS2. So I get ADS2 crosses 2, whereas 2, there's 2, the area of this 2 or R squared of this 2 is written as 1 plus 5. And then the STS geometry, Schwarzschild-Sitter geometry, it also factorizes in this near extrema regime. Now I go to Euclidean signature again. And this becomes the Euclidean DS2, which is nothing but the sphere. This is a little bit unfortunate because now I get DS2 times S2, but Euclidean DS2 is also S2. So this is Euclidean DS2, which is also S2, but this S2 is not, it's different from that S2. And then there will be this phi solution, which is again the size of this factor. Which is given by B times cosine theta. And this A, B and B naught, they just depend on the parameters of this solution. So if you remember, these solutions have some parameters like the mass. So there are the masses here, masses of the black holes and the charge. So these parameters determine these constants that I have there. Okay, so this was a simplification. What happens is that now what we need to do is to just study the problem, tunneling from gluing ADS2 to DS2, which is much simpler. Now, what is the solution that I'm going to propose or to consider? So as I said, I have excitation inside the DS2 region. So I have excitation inside Euclidean ADS2. So this is ADS2 plus excitation. And then this is the Euclidean version, this is the Lorentzian version of that with the excitation. And now I have, now I want to consider this excitation to decay into a region of the theta. So here my the theta region, here I have the ADS region. ADS two. But we should remember that these ADS two regions are just the near horizon geometries of this asymptotically Minkowski solution. So eventually they open up and they connect to asymptotic Minkowski.
Excuse me. Yes. It looks like the green region has a singularity part. So why the digital space-time has no singularity? So I'm a bit confused.
This is a very good question. So as I said, by Penrose singularity theorem, if I get asymptotic the theta in the future, I have to have a singularity in the past. And here, yes, I do get it. But I get it when I analytically continue the solution that I got after tunneling to the past. So if I classically extend my future solution to the past, I will get a singularity. But this future solution resulted from tunneling from another geometry which did not have a singularity in the past.
So is this like not Dozita, but a Schwarzschild Dozita space-time?
Is this correct? Yes. It is Schwarzschild Dozita. But
I see. Okay.
But when you go to this near extremal limit, then the 2D geometry becomes approximately 2D Dozita.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, but of course, eventually here I expand and it becomes just a full 4D. 4D the city. So eventually here you get inflation.
Yes.
In 4D.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And now I see that I'm at the hour and perhaps at the middle of my talk. So I try to go very fast if it is okay to take some more time.
Sure, I think maybe 5 or 10 more minutes for people who want to stick around. That would be okay.
Okay, thank you. So let me just mention that. So we want to consider basically this whole problem of gluing these geometries together. So what I'm doing is that I construct this Euclidean solution. In which this brains, so this excitation, I model it by brain. Which if I go to 2D, it just becomes a particle. And then the domain are also particle. And there are some free parameters here, which are the tensions of this brain, which I, after some normalization, I call it kappa zero, and the tension of the domain wall, which after normalization, I call it kappa. So there are these parameters. And then there were those original parameters from the geometries, A, B, and B naught. So there are a bunch of parameters, and the idea is that can I find such a solution so that if I can cut it at the moment of time reversal symmetry, I will get the geometry that I want, the geometry on the right. And the only non-trivial equation that has to be solved is the equation of the junction conditions across this domain was, which are basically the statement that phi left has to be equal to phi right. The phi, now remember phi was just the size of this two factor, which now feels, now it is called the D letter in 2D. This is the size of this two factor in the 4D geometry. Of course, minus one, there was a big part, and this is the fluctuations of that. So there should be continuity of this across the domain. And then there will be a jump of the normal derivative. which is related to the tension. So the idea is that if I have this domain wall, and then I have two regions on the two sides of it, and if I consider norma xi mu, so here I have the phi solution on the right and phi solution to the left, there will be a jump condition of that. And then the last thing to consider is that here I have the process of the decay of the brain into this domain wall. Well, I shouldn't have put arrows here, but let's consider, let's give them some momenta. So P1, P2, P3. And the third condition is just energy momentum conservation at this bifurcation point. So sum over I pi mu is equal to zero. So basically, these equations can be solved with some choice of the parameters. And one gets there, the claims that there exists a solution. So I don't go through the math. Let me just mention something about the dynamics of this process, microscopics of this process of the decay, the brain going to the domain wall, because that might sound a bit exotic, but I want to say that this is not to, this is something that one could in principle imagine. So this original excitation that we had, it had to decay to the domain wall. Now I want to give a microscopic model. This microscopic model is the following. Let's imagine the two well potential, and let's forget about the small mismatch between the minima. So if I had this double well potential, then I would have a kink anti-kink configuration. And I would also have fundamental particle of phi naught. Oops. And this phi field now again. So this phi field, now this phi is different than that. Phi is really a field in 2D. I want to consider the excitations at the bottom of this potential. So now there's a coupling between this fundamental particle and the kink anti-kink. However, the process, fundamental particle going to kink anti-kink, is forbidden at weak coupling. It's just kinematically forbidden. But if it is kinematically forbidden at weak coupling, then what it means is that it is actually kinematically allowed in Euclidean signature. So therefore is allowed in Euclidean. So that's how one should think about this process of the So I have this original excitation that decays into the domain wall. So one should think of the domain wall as this kink anti-kink configuration that interpolates to the false vacuum. And this original excitation is something that is coupled to that. And that could be just the fundamental particle in the true vacuum. And this process is forbidden in at weak coupling, it is forbidden in Lorentzian, but allowed in Euclidean signature. So it's exactly what we want. But the statement is that in this gravitational configuration, so this decay, of course, cannot happen in Lorentzian signature. So although I can write it, I can draw some diagram in Euclidean, I can never rotate it in flat space into a Lorentzian configuration. The statement here is that in the presence of gravity, that diagram can be rotated into Lorentzian. This is a bit similar to if you consider you have a light axion whose mass is less than the mass of electron, then the process A to E plus E minus is forbidden kinematically. But in the presence of an electric field, it becomes a law. So something similar happens here. The process that is forbidden without gravity, now in the presence of gravity, it is a law. Okay, so now,
So Mehrdad, can I just make sure I understand the statement? What you've shown is that if you start with a one of these Reisner-Nordström black holes where you identify the two different asymptopias with one another to make a wormhole, then in that geometry it's possible to make a bubble of De Sitter.
Yes, you can in that geometry,
and
or that geometry in addition.
And in the extremal case, it's just to let you solve it explicitly. But the idea is that maybe more generally it's possible in that background. Is that right?
Yes. This near extremal just allows me to be able to find a solution simply. So I don't know if there is a solution if I don't go. I mean, I expect that there is, but I haven't found it.
But
I should emphasize that the existence of this excitation here is important for my solution. In fact, I would say that is probably the main novelty of this solution compared to that of the Fahy, Husan, Guven. The fact that I introduce an additional excitation that decays into the domain one.
And how does this all relate to the original question of whether this is possible in sort of starting from asymptotically flat space? Can one start from asymptotically flat space, create this sort of this black hole solution, and then create within that a De Sitter universe? Or are you saying that if you start in a universe that already has the topology of this black hole solution, then you can create it?
So the expectation is that I can create geometries like this. How? There are, for instance, solutions, relatively old solutions by Garfinkel and Strominger. So the idea is that you can Schwinger pair produce this wormhole. Imagine you have a very large magnetic field. Then there is a probability, of course it's exponentially small, but there is a probability to Schwinger pair produce black holes, opposite the charged black holes, which are connected inside.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm imagining is that experimental setup is that in this region, when there is a large magnetic field, one also introduces some perturbations which play the role of this excitation in the middle.
Mm-hmm. And you think there's no issue is going to arise where to make a sufficiently large field to produce the black holes or something that one will reintroduce the.
You mean to have this Schwinger pair production?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of it. I mean, I guess you're just saying as long as it's over the critical field for making.
But when we are talking about pair production of particles, then of course I have to go above some threshold for making them.
Here
I'm talking about the formation of this black hole, so I in principle I don't even need to have any monopoles, magnetic monopoles. Just in the presence of the magnetic field, there is some probability of forming it. I can also say that there is another scenario, more recent one, proposed by Maldacena and collaborators. They constructed a traversable magnetic wormhole. Mm-hmm. So this is basically this similar setup that I'm considering here, except that there is some additional matter fields that make this traversable.
Mm-hmm.
I should say that they do not So yeah, perhaps this is not really an answer to your question because they don't really have a concrete construction of the connected geometry. They say that if the connected geometry exists, they can make it traversal.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the expectation is that they had some maybe toy models in 2D in which they, in that toy model, they expected that this process of connecting and changing the topology happens relatively quickly in good condition.
Okay.
So there is a hope that it might even be faster than one expect to produce this.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let me to skip the effective potential. This the whole thing reduces to some particle in the potential, and that potential, the point is that it has a solution. The tunneling probability, what I can do is that compare the probability of forming this DS bubble to the probability of having this brain and estimate it by the difference, e to the difference of the actions for the two solutions. So this S naught is the one for the brain, and then there is a bounce action that I constructed. And the whole point is that this delta S that I have here is something of order phi. So phi, remember, was the small deviations of the size of fluctuations of the size of the sphere. So phi was the small parameter times R naught squared. R naught was the actual size of the throat of the wormhole divided by G Newton. And this quantity, so phi is much less than one, which means that this quantity is much less than the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of the black hole, which is kind of satisfactory because it says that the probability for this process can be very suppressed, exponentially suppressed, but still it is much larger than the number of microstates of black hole. So it is unlikely, but not too unlikely. I guess I stop here. So just the conclusion. The conclusion is very short. There could be Minkowski in space in our past. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot, Mehrdad, for a very interesting talk. Yes, let's all applaud. Virtually. So we had a lot of great discussion during the talk. Were there any more questions for Mehrdad? Looks like Matt has raised his hand.
Hi, Mehrdad. So I was just, maybe it went a bit fast for me, but how is it that you circumvent the double cover that plagues the action-based version of Guhi-Farth solution here with this wormhole? Like somehow you don't have that similar double cover or singularity?
No, I don't have it. And it's basically because of this this new ingredient that I introduced here. So I have this extra original excitation that I have in this geometry. What it does is that, so I was mentioning the reason why that solution has some problem is that in order to glue these geometries with a positive tension brain, you will have you will need this R, the size of the sphere, to behave to have a jump which is concave. Since in asymptotic ADS, the size of the sphere grows towards the boundary, while in the theta is just asymptotes to a constant, you will get the opposite behavior. Now, by introducing this excitation, what happens is that there will be, so the behavior of the R factor here, it bounces back because it goes down. If you look at the size of the sphere, as you go from the asymptotic ADS, you get to the horizon. You get to the horizon when it is small, and then again, it becomes larger. So you will get a behavior of the R factor, which is like that. And then at that point, we can glue the De Sitter region, and then again, go back. So this in their setup, in order to get this kind of behavior, they had to have another copy of the cigar geometry in which the R component grows. While here the way it works is that this excitation automatically produces that space for the bubble to form.
Yeah, so I think it works similarly to what happens if you introduce a small positive lambda into the Guth-Fahrhi story. So then there actually becomes two different ways that you can go to the false vacuum bubble. One of them is to make the bubble behind the wormhole, and the other one is to make it really big. Uh-huh. But Schwarzschild De Sitter is periodic, so those two are really kind of secretly the same thing. But you avoid this double cover problem by choosing to tunnel in one direction rather than the other. Uh-huh. So I think that for a similar reason, you don't run into that problem here. And it's kind of the magical properties of Schwarzschild De Sitter that allow you to not run into this weird, you know, coordinate time reversal problem, which is really why you get the double cover in the Euclidean picture.
I guess I'm not familiar enough with the details of that construction, but it is true that we have tunneling from De Sitter to De Sitter. From Coleman de Lucia, we know that is a possibility.
Yeah. So if you break the Coleman de Lucia has O4 symmetry. If you just make it O3 symmetric, like these solutions we're contemplating. Uh-huh. Then the version of the Lee-Weinberg uptunneling basically is this, that you have Schwarzschild De Sitter, you're trying to glue a small De Sitter region to a big De Sitter region, and it just, instead of pushing it behind the wormhole, you make the bubble really big. But Schwarzschild De Sitter is periodic, so those two are kind of secretly really the same thing. But I send you a paper and you can... Maybe we can talk about it some other time.
Okay, are there any other questions for Mirdad?
So in your scenario, this De Sitter is formed behind the horizon, right? So basically we cannot, I mean, or this advanced civilization that created it cannot communicate with it, right?
Unfortunately, no.
But if you use this traversable wormhole that you mentioned at the end,
I spend a lot of time trying to do that, and then I realized that it's not gonna work.
So never communication. Never.
It's just a theorem because you need to violate the Acrona null energy condition for that, and these traversable wormholes, they are just. They are based on reasonable matter, so they don't violate achronal. They are just like Casimir energy. It's achronal, like to see why it is achronal neck is kind of easy in this same picture, right? Because if I want to send the signal, I want to send the signal to this point from somewhere in this boundary, right? So these two boundaries, one can think of them as being identified, right? Here and there. Because from outside, they are connected. And the length of the wormhole is much longer than the out could be much longer. So this you can think as being identified. But the problem is that if you imagine moving up a bit, this opening up this horizon so that I can communicate, this will be an acoronal null ray. It won't have any conjugate point.
Mm-hmm.
It's an acoronal null ray which along which the area of the sphere is shrinking and then expanding. So it's exactly what is what requires violation of null energy condition.
But if they just want to leave a message for us in the shape of the universe that they create for us or something like that, is that also forbidden? Or
well, I think in principle, if something is around during this tunneling process, it might end up in the bubble. But it's not. I don't see a clean channel of communication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. So only encoding information in the fundamental cup, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much for the talk. Actually, I have to go. So.
Okay, thank you for the
question.
Can I ask a quick question, perhaps?
Sure.
So what prevents you from doing the same construction as in your quantum field theory example of taking a inflating bubble and time reversing that?
Well, the inflating bubble will not decay into asymptotic Minkowski.
Even after the black hole evaporates or something, it's not.
If I have an inflating bubble, I will just get asymptotic. De Sitter, right? The idea was that whatever you consider. Whatever initial state that you consider in QFT, eventually it will decay into asymptotic states of your QFT in the background in some Minkowski space, asymptotic Minkowski. And I then collect all of those outgoing wave function and do a time reversal.
But what if inflation ends in the bubble? That's also still not Minkowski asymptotic then?
Okay, maybe I should have said something else. I guess I don't know how to apply time reversal in gravity. Because if I apply time reversal, I will get H dot positive, which means that I'm violating null energy condition.
Interesting.
I don't know what does it mean to apply time reversal to cosmology.
Okay, I'll think about it.
Okay, are there any further questions? Okay, it sounds like no. So why don't we all thank Merdad again? Very nice talk.
Thank you.